documentary on News Talk.
Now on documentary and drama on News Talk, producer JJ O'Shea tells the story of the Irish-based Congolese guitar maestro, Niwel Toumbou. This is Niwel, A Life in Music.
You cannot predict what's going to come out of him. And so there's the constant possibility of being surprised.
We joke that he's an alien, that he's not really, he's from space.
When you have that energy, you never feel old, and you never get old, really. It's just it's like the secret of eternal youth or something, you know, to have that joy coming out all the time.
The story of Congolese guitar player Niwel Toumbou, who's based in Ireland, is an extraordinary one. He's one of the most in-demand musicians in the country without ever consciously trying to make a career out of music. It was simply a passion, and out of this passion, a road opened up, a road that has taken him around the globe and the chance to explore a myriad of musical worlds. Of course, it doesn't hurt that he possesses an unrivaled expertise on both acoustic and electric guitar. And without a doubt, he's brought something unique, valuable and enduring to the cultural life of Ireland. Niwel was born in 1982 in the city of Kinshasa, in what was then Zaire and is today titled the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC. Kinshasa is the capital of the DRC. It's a vibrant, hot, crowded city. Much of life is lived outdoors. Socialising, commerce, cooking, most of it happens outdoors. And it's a city alive with music. You hear it everywhere, from cafes and bars vying for attention, street buskers, radios from the open windows of slow-moving traffic, and bands rehearsing in the many neighbourhoods, both traditional and modern groups playing the pop styles of Congolese rumba and seben. And in the churches too, music is a big part of church services. In fact, it was in the church that the young Niwel first learnt to play, and his first instrument wasn't the guitar, it was the drums.
In the church, I used to go with my grandfather every Sunday. We went every Sunday with my grandfather, but the church was a traditional church from the west of Congo, so Bayombe tribe, they're from the west of Congo. So there used to be the drums and, you know, shakers and bells, and everybody in the church has to play an instrument. You know, when people are singing, we'd always go in the front. There used to be a lot of percussion, and that's where we'd all get to play percussion. So drums, you know, shakers and bell and things like that. So I'd say there, that's where I would play a lot of drums in the percussion in the church.
So it was traditional music that first excited the young Niwel. And Kinshasa, being the city it was, drawing people from all over the country, meant that Niwel was exposed to a rich tapestry of sound. There were musicians from the north, or the Luoba people from the centre of Congo, or the Yombe from the west. And the guitar too had found a place in both traditional and popular music. It had entered the culture in colonial times, so alongside the traditional instruments like the balafon and the djembe drum, acoustic and electric guitars were a common sight. And in fact, the most popular music in the 90s was a driving guitar-led sound known locally as seben and in the West as soukous. And when Niwil was in his early teens, his brother became captivated by that sound and began learning the guitar.
And that was the only instrument that was around the house. So he used to come, bring the guitar, then, you know, he was playing one, he was playing actually this line. Which is a line that from a band of, at the time, a band called Wenge Musica. So they were really popular. And so this line was part of, you know, it was very popular at the time. So he was playing, and then I was like, oh, can you teach me that? Then he told me how to play, you know. You know, I just never stopped.
And playing the guitar became an all-consuming passion.
Everything that happened to me with music is weird, you know. Music, I always, now especially when I look back, I never had a dream of becoming a musician. But as soon as I started playing the instrument, I was so obsessed with it. Nothing else in the world existed, you know. But when I look back, I think, you know, it was like music, it was a way for me to get out of there. You know, this is because I was, when I, my dad died when I was like three years old, and my mom wasn't very well. You know, she was sick. So I was, by the time I was like 14, 15, I didn't really have any guidance. And in Africa, in Congo, you know, you have no dad, single mom was sick. There's no hope for you. You know, especially at the time, you know, the 1995, 96, the war was just starting. You know, the path would be like, you're probably just going to end up in the army or become a criminal or like a street kid. There's a lot of street kids in those. So the path was kind of bleak, you know. There wasn't really not much hope at all. But when I look at music, I feel like, you know, now I say that it chose me to just get me out of that. Because everything that happened to me with music, it's not like I dreamed of. I never had any big dreams. But every time I would play, someone would go, oh, that's nice, then they might give me money.
In fact, Niwil discovered he could provide for himself and his family by busking on the street.
Because we'd go for days, we had no way of eating, no food. But when I started playing the guitar, you know, I'd play the guitar just on the street, somebody would hear me play, they'd be like, oh, you're so good, they might give me bread, you know, they might give me money. So things started coming that way, you know.
Perhaps we should briefly just reflect on the history of the Congo. Europe's involvement in Africa, of course, was not a happy one for the Africans, and in the Congo, it was worse than most. Historian Cahill Mansfield.
It so happened in the scramble for Africa, and it was all tidied up in 1885 in Berlin. King Leopold of the Belgians wound up having the present area of the Congo as his personal property, and he ran it with a rod of iron and a reign of terror. So he began to exploit it for rubber and also for ivory, and extensive rubber plantations, and if you missed your quota, you could have your arm cut off. So it was a total reign of terror.
It was an Irishman, Roger Casement, who was born in Antrim and is best remembered in Ireland today as a Republican hero. He was the British consul in the Congo at the beginning of the 20th century, and he did much to expose the horrific abuses, including murder and mutilation, under Leopold's reign of terror. And this helped lead to Leopold relinquishing his brutal control of the region to the Belgian government, under whom there was a small but not a marked improvement.
The Belgians left in 1960, and whereas the British and the French generally left behind some kind of administration, the Belgians left very little, and there was chaos.
After independence, the first Prime Minister, the inspirational figure, Patrice Lumumba, was assassinated, almost certainly with foreign involvement, and this paved the way for foreign mining companies and powerful factions to fight for control over different regions, because the Congo proved to be rich in minerals. But it's not a wealth that has reached the common people.
For the younger people, there wasn't anything really. Unemployment was very high. The state was only a shadow, really. And the further you got away from Kinshasa, the more you did your own thing, if you're a local governor or something. internal communications are not great for the size of the country, you know. It's huge. Exploration showed that particularly in the south and in the east, it was rich in all kinds of stuff. Copper, uranium, cadmium, gold, diamonds, cobalt and coltan. Coltan is kind of a rare wood, I think, but it's very important in the production of phones and computers. So all that was there, various mining interests of going around and doing deals and spreading, if you like, a bit of unrest here and there.
Internal warfare, exacerbated by the changing situations in neighbouring Rwanda, the involvement of foreign interests and plain old-fashioned greed has meant that large regions at best are unstable and at worst are volatile and dangerous.
And it's still a sensitive area today. You know, nothing is by any means settled. And obviously with the diamond mining and the gold mining and everything, so there's raids and counter-raids as to who will control what.
Unsurprisingly, Newell was looking for a way out. And in 2004, he visited Ireland at the suggestion of a friend who was living in Dublin. He had no intention of staying. Brussels and Paris are the two big centres of Congolese emigration. But destiny intervened.
Didn't take long, actually. I met my wife, you know, my then girlfriend, my wife now. And yeah, the rest is history.
It was Newell's open attitude that led to his first gig in Ireland, an openness that was perhaps unusual in his community.
Every single African that I met, everybody kind of was afraid, actually, to come into the Irish, you know, community. You know, everybody was just like afraid. Yeah, this was like, oh, this, you know, people... I suppose that's racism thing. People sometimes just have in their minds. I was never that kind of person, you know. Unless you tell me, don't talk to me, then I won't talk to you. If you don't say that to me, I'll come and I'll approach you. So in fact, as I say, the very first person I played with, I just saw him playing on the street, and I went to him and said, I'm a musician. You know, I just arrived here. He's like, okay, play something. I play literally a chord. He's like, oh, you're good. Come, I have a gig next week, I don't have a guitarist. That was my first concert, literally like that.
Newell became a regular member of a Congolese soukous group based in Cork, known as the Lais. But it was after leaving that group that he realised he didn't want to be confined to just one style, and he began to ask himself a fundamental question.
Who am I? You know, I wanted to find myself. Who am I if I was going to be navigating this world of art, you know, what can I do? So that's when I started really creating my own vision, and I noticed, well, I have this knowledge of traditional African music, and I have the knowledge of the, you know, let's say pop, like soukous, which is, you know, pop music, and a bit of jazz and a bit of classical music, all this. And it made sense for me to just, I didn't even think of it that way, but the more I started writing, it kind of, again, just created my path, just create itself, you know.
And perhaps it's no coincidence that Newell soon came into contact with Irish musicians with a similar attitude. And the first of these was the Irish percussionist Eamon Cagney, who'd been studying hand drumming in Ghana. And after returning to Ireland, Eamon was consciously looking out for a possible collaborator.
When I came back, I was really looking for someone to match my vision and also my kind of passion and for playing rhythmic music. And I thought it would be another drummer. You know, I'll meet another drummer and we'll have this kind of duo. And it turned out it was a guitarist. It was Newell.
met Eamon in 2000, maybe 5 or 6. And since then, we've done so many different projects. So with Eamon, what was the reason we worked so well together is, you know, I'm the kind of musician, I just want to go into the room, start playing. You know, let's just play. And Eamon had that mentality. You'd meet, you just play. And then the next day you'd meet, he worked out everything, he's always on top of it.
Composer and percussionist Mel Mercier remembers his first encounter with Newell and Eamon in performance.
I mean, I was like exhilarated by it. And I still, to this day, would say that they were, for me, the most important embodiment of that thing that we might call world music in Ireland, because there was something about the rootedness of both of them in their own traditions, at the same time as the fact that they were both explorers, and somehow they found each other. And it was that encounter between the two of them and the sparks that flew and the shared language and then pushing into new spaces of new language that they created together that I found really, really compelling.
Mel had been working with Mihal O'Sullivan across a number of projects. They were exploring musical fusions, often rooted in Irish trad, and they were looking for musicians who might offer something new. Mel suggested Newell, so all of a sudden, Newell found himself playing music rooted in the Irish tradition, music he hadn't been familiar with, but one in which he found his own place.
If I was playing Irish traditional music, there's no way I'm going to play like somebody from Donegal. Like, it's just not going to happen, you know? It's very different sentiment, you know, that they grew up with, you know, they grew up with a lot of dark cloud. I didn't, you know? But I can only bring my personality onto the music, and that's why, you know, Mihal O'Sullivan was a very good introduction. Like, he's the very first Irish traditional music musician. I played with him and Mel. They all had that sense, you know. They never told me you have to play like you're from Clare or something like that. They always welcomed different idea, you know. And I'll just do something they'll be like for jig. He get me in. I remember him. That's the only thing he told me to do for jig. So like a. I remember Mel, he's like, yeah, for jig always that have that feel. You know, I think it was having, you know, people like that who were looking for something different already, you know, and I had the, I suppose, the ear and the respect and the love of the music, that whatever I did, they never said to me, don't do that. So that in return, so I listened more to what they were doing and I learned some tunes. And over the years, I've done a lot of trad, like really a lot of trad.
So this Congolese musician found himself in demand in the world of Irish trad, playing with Dervish, Donal Lunny and Martin O'Connor, just to name a few.
I got to really love trad, and I go to sessions, you know, when I lived in Greystones, I would go, every time I was home, I'd go to session every Thursday. Like, you know, I've actually done a lot of trad, you know, I know a few tunes, yeah.
Another departure for Newell has been in the area of classical and avant-garde and contemporary art music. But classically trained musicians like to work from a score, and this involved developing a new skill.
Yeah, classical musicians, contemporary, you know, they like things written. You know, I mean, I would love it to. I'd love not to write it. That would be perfect if we could just go and just play, do this. But they like things written, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
He's composed for the Crash Ensemble in Dublin and in 2020 was commissioned to compose a new piece for Britain's Surge Orchestra. Newell called it New Well, with every pun intended, and it was premiered at the Midland Arts Centre in Birmingham. As you can hear, the reach of Newell's musical range is extraordinary. Eamon Cagney played percussion at that performance in Birmingham.
Music is really his, it's just really in his heart all the time. It's just there, active all the time. You know, you never, when you have that energy, you never feel old and you never get old, really. It's just, it's like the secret of eternal youth or something, you know, to have that joy coming out all the time.
Listening to Newell, A Life in Music, on Documentary and Drama on News Talk. This is Documentary and Drama on News Talk. You are listening to Newell, A Life in Music.
For more than 20 years now, multi-award-winning artist and possibly the hardest-working person in the country, Rhiannon Giddens has been uncovering the African root in American music, especially in those areas where the African element hasn't really been acknowledged, such as in the development of country music. And when she moved to Ireland, perhaps it was inevitable that her path would cross with Newell's. Newell was invited to come and work on some tracks for an album she was making with Francisco Turisi. But initially, there was a slight language problem because Rhiannon had picked up some Irish terms and Newell didn't quite understand.
I kept asking her on that track, what do you want me to do? She just kept going, oh, just go to town. And I don't even know what going to town mean. You know, I had no idea. I was like, she must not like me. She wants me to leave or something. Because so we recorded and she goes, I'm going to name it after you. And then she named the song after me, Newell Goes to Town, you know. But for her to just do it just because I played, you know, it's such an honour. You know, I just felt such an honour.
And that track, which Rhiannon called Newell Goes to Town, appeared on the album They're Calling Me Home. And the album won a Grammy for Best Folk Album in 2022.
I never associated myself with Grammy. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, the album came out and it's nominated and it got a Grammy. In a way, meeting Rhiannon kind of answered a lot of questions for me. Because I was always interested in traditional music, but the music she played me on the banjo, it made complete sense. You know, the music that she's playing to me on the banjo, I'm like, this sounds like very, very Congolese music today. You know, it sounds like, oh, this is what a Congolese person would play today. So it was very familiar to me. So in that way, it was easy for me to, you know, to just dive in and actually experiment with it just on the go because it was quite familiar, the music. It really was like, now I can see this lot of stuff that we do today that I think is modern, but it's actually no modern at all. You know, these people would have traveled with it and it went. Now I feel like it's coming back. It's definitely making a circle back towards me. That's for sure. I really feel that deep about it.
And in 2024, Rhiannon picked up another Grammy nomination for the song Louisiana Man, which also featured Newell.
You turned my head, tripped up my mind, you Louisiana man. Louisiana man, I never knew that things were gonna get so far. I never knew where. I never knew that you were gonna break my heart. You Louisiana man.
But perhaps the project that best reflects Newell's all-embracing approach to music and to life is the Cross-Cultural Silk Road Project, founded by the acclaimed cellist Yo-Yo Ma in 1998 and currently under the artistic direction of Rhiannon Giddens. The initial idea was to feature musicians from the different countries along the ancient Eurasian trade route known as the Silk Road. It's a project that celebrates difference, and the underlying principle is connecting people and ideas from around the world.
All of a sudden, we're playing with people from everywhere, you know, it was like, we have Indian, Chinese, we have Japanese and, you know, Serbia, and everybody really open-minded, bringing music of their culture, and then it's, you know, it's open. It's not like we're trying to copy any culture. That's what I want to do, you know, that's what I love, you know, it's approaching it from a open mind, you know, from a more international point of view, because it's the best way to communicate, you know, because there's no judgment, there's no expectation, it's just, you know, if you respect something, you'll do something nice to just enhance what's there already.
Musical fusions of this kind require special qualities in the players. It's a field that has particularly interested Mel Mercier.
If you have improvising, musicians who have improvisational skills and an openness and an interest in dialogue and an interest in finding a third space between two musics, that's when something else can happen. Newell is one of those musicians. He has both the interest in finding new spaces. He has the generosity to share his own skills and his own passion in collaboration with others. And also, he's a brilliant listener. And that's key. So I would say that the single most important ingredient, I mean, I think we could say this about any dialogue, but it's certainly the case, it's also the case in musical dialogue, is listening. So the more people who listen in an ensemble, for example, the more that it will gel. And also the more that that ensemble might move forward together. Now, if they're moving together in exploration, then there's a fantastic capacity for opening up new spaces and discovery. Niwel can be at the, in an ensemble, in my experience, he can be at the very heart of that movement.
A guitar player immersed in the rhythms of Africa may not seem like the obvious choice in a musical setting for an epic Irish folk tale, but when Eamon Cagney devised a stage performance based on the medieval legend of young Conall of Howth, he took an original approach to presenting folklore, and a risky one, because he didn't rely on the more typical settings for Irish storytelling. Young Conall of Howth was presented at the Lexicon and Dún Laoghaire in 2019. The legend itself is an ancient one. Eamon Cagney again.
It's a late medieval Irish romance, you could say, but not in the modern sense of romance. It's just what they call these epic folk tales back then. And it was composed, they think, by Manus O'Donnell, a scribe of the O'Donnell chieftains in Donegal, maybe in the 1400s. And I wanted it to be set music and narrative, but also improvised sections and creative process as well. So that's what we tried to do, myself and Newell, and also keyboardist and synth player Dara O'Kelly.
Howth was where Finn McCool and the Fianna had their base, one of them anyway, where Diarmaid and Grainne hid, and where Deirdre of the Sorrows and the Sons of Ishlew sheltered before they fled across the sea, away from Croghair Mac Niasa and the Red Branch Knights. Vi sin an agus is fada vi, mar vi mac riar erin dar avanyum Conall.
Former director of the National Folklore Collection, Rianaki O'Gorn, explains why she felt this innovative approach was so successful.
I think there's a general perception of folklore being in the realm of antiquarianism and backward-looking, and that since the coining of the word folklore, that it was associated very much with things in the past and relics and remnants. Seeing young Conall of Howth performed in the Lexicon and Dún Laoghaire was an exceptional kind of experience for somebody like me who had experienced folktale very much in a more traditional manner. And the kind of music that was composed for it and played at it was very new, very different, and quite unexpected. You could see how much people enjoyed it, and they engaged with the tale in a way that they mightn't otherwise ever have engaged with that particular tale.
Newell has also been an inspiration to a younger generation. Actor and singer Loa is one of the bright new voices on the Irish scene.
To describe Newell, the first word that comes to mind in a more serious sense is genius, because you always get the sense when you're with him that he's a living genius, and he's such a genius that he doesn't know he's a genius, you know, that kind of way where he's so absorbed all the time in his process, in his practice, in his creativity. I think he was always a mentor. I was always learning from him, and he's played on all my solo recordings. And every time I'm with him at a gig or a recording, I always leave knowing something more. We joke that he's an alien, that he's not really, he's from space. He's got the ears of a jazz musician with the complexity of someone who can play African music, because that's in his blood, and then Western music, classical. But what's interesting is in learning from him, he's not trying to perfect one style. He's trying to perfect Newell. And that's really interesting, because it's trying to find a level of authenticity in his playing that is without genre, but it's a character and a personality.
Mel Mercier was invited to compose the soundtrack for the RTE documentary First Conviction. The story tells of a couple's wrongful conviction and imprisonment, and it has a strong African dimension and a strong Irish dimension.
I immediately thought of Newell, because I was interested in having some element in the soundscape, in the sound world, that had that African signature. And I brought Newell into the studio, invited him into the studio. He came in, we recorded in Cork. And I've been in the studio before with Newell, and you cannot predict what's going to come out of him. And so there's the constant possibility of being surprised. But his sound is unmistakably his sound. And it has its own particular character, its own signature, its own personality. It does exactly what I had hoped it would do, which is to invoke, to echo, to create the resonance of the African dimension of the First Conviction story.
In 2024, Newell released an album with a focus on solo acoustic guitar. He called it Millimo, and it was recorded in just 2 days in Peter Gabriel's Real World Studios.
So yeah, I was really, really happy to actually do that. It gave me more confidence, because I truly never thought that I'll ever make it like a solo album, just guitar. You know, it's just it's like, yeah, who's gonna listen to it? But been getting a lot of got really good response from me. So I'm really happy for that.
We're going to conclude with a new song, which Niwil has composed especially for this programme. It's titled Tosela, which translates as What Have We Done? And the song has two aims. One is musical, showing how the blues has echoes in the traditional music of the Congo. And the other is to raise awareness of the ongoing plight of the Congolese people, the effects of the wars ongoing now for over 30 years, and the poverty, all of which are rarely mentioned in the media, in spite of the crucial role that the Congo plays in supplying essential materials for the modern world, and the wealth, of course, that's created but never reaches the common people.
But every day you wake up, it's like, you know, there's more people died and more women raped, more children died and more people displaced. And then I'm just wondering, I'm like, why does it have to be this way? You know, why can't we just live at peace? I know it doesn't have to be perfect, but, you know, this war never stops. That's just the sad thing about it. You know, it's just that it just keeps going and going. And I just want to people to at least, you know, bring on the table people to just realize this is what's going on, and this country is really vital part of the modern world. Since the beginning of the modern world, it's just been offering so much to the world, and people should at least know that. Because I think if people want to come and take, that's okay, but why can't there be some kind of deals that just allows the country to prosper, that allows people to just live a peaceful life? They can have water, they can have food to eat, just that simple, you know.
And here is the premiere of that song, Tosela, in which Niwil is joined by Rhiannon Giddens on banjo and vocals, Eamon Cagney on percussion, and Tony O'Flaherty on harmonica.
Thank you.
Newell, A Life in Music was produced and presented by JJ O'Shea and was supported by Commission Naman as part of the Sound and Vision Scheme. For more, see newstalk.com.